Chapter 21. Your Child is Your Teacher. Grown-ups never understand anything for themselves, and it's tiresome for children to be always and forever explaining things to them.
Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, The Little Prince.
Parenting is far less stressful and exhausting when we know it's not up to us to mold our children's characters, fix their problems, and be responsible for their pain.
When we know they're not extensions of ourselves, we can trust their individuality and know that their wonder and mystery, which sometimes cause them fear, are healthy and appropriate. With this trust, we can learn as much from them as they learn from us. By pushing our buttons, our children are exposing a problem we hold deep inside. We can look or we can turn away. If we look, healing can take place. Their behavior is signaling their need, and at the same time pointing out, sometimes quite harshly, that perhaps the only way we can take care of that need is by taking care of our own first. What we wanted most from our own parents is what we have the hardest time giving our children, even when we react by overcompensating for what we didn't get. Martha's mother, Catherine, was a famous author and teacher who was narcissistic and unavailable. Martha was usually left alone with a nanny. When she did get to accompany her mother, she was left in the car with a book and some water, often for hours at a time. Her mother's students were given preferential treatment, and Martha was instructed never to interfere. Despite her mother's affluence, Martha was clothed in hand-me-downs and went on outings only when a friend's parent invited her. She was shipped off to boarding school her freshman year of high school and was allowed home only for Christmas and spring break. Martha was determined to be the mother she never had. She was heartbroken when she found herself childless after 5 years of trying to get pregnant. She and her husband adopted a daughter. Martha pampered Carol and gave her everything she asked for and more. She never went out unless it was to take Carolyn somewhere. She anticipated her daughter's every desire. Martha complained sheepishly in class one day that she was becoming aware of feelings that scared her. She confessed that a few days prior she had blurted out to Carolyn, now age 9, "You're selfish and ungrateful. You will stand here and say thank you to me, or you will have no dinner tonight." As she was saying the words, she horrified herself, but they kept on coming. She said she felt possessed. And to top it off, Carolyn refused to say thank you, so I sent her to her room without dinner. I had flashbacks of when my mother did the same thing to me. "What did she have to say thank you for?" another mother in the group asked. "I bought her the most adorable dress. She told me she hated it and would wear it over her dead body. Honest to God, I felt like smacking her. If I'd been given a dress like that, I would have kissed my mother's feet. And she would have expected it, too." "Was she with you when you bought the dress?" another parent asked. "No, I just loved it and wanted to surprise her with it. She usually likes that." "I wonder if she's becoming a bit more independent of what you want for her," I speculated.
"I guess so. She's not wearing anything I suggest anymore and is putting the weirdest combination of things together. The other morning I wouldn't let her go to school until she'd changed. She looked like, well, awful." Martha was feeling vulnerable with her confessions. She had always boasted of her positive relationship with her daughter.
"It must feel confusing to you when Carolyn shows no gratitude for what you would have given your right arm for," I offered. Her resentment began to surface.
"How can she be so ungrateful? She just takes me for granted. Who does she think I am, anyway?"
"Perhaps she knows you will do anything she wants because that's what you have devoted your life to." Martha was intrigued and asked me to say more. "And so she hasn't had the chance to learn that you're not to be taken for granted. I imagine you wish you could have taken your mother for granted."
Wow, what would that have felt like? So I'm getting angry at her for being the way I wish I could have been? All I wanted was a thank you. But that's what my mother always demanded of me. It never mattered what I thought. Am I telling Carolyn that what she likes doesn't matter?
Maybe, was all I needed to say.
Martha began putting the pieces together quickly. She realized that what she wanted her mother to be for her
was not what Carolyn needed or wanted. She had no idea what Carolyn wanted, but she was beginning to see that Carolyn needed her opinions to be taken seriously.
Martha was thinking out loud, "I did everything I could think of for her because I was so afraid of not being loved. I guess I needed to be loved so badly that I was blind to what Carolyn needed. I thought she would want what I had wished for, and if I gave it to her, she would love me forever." Martha laughed as she admitted this. It was out in the open. Martha put a lot of work into creating the perfect childhood that she had always wanted. She projected her own wishes onto her daughter and then expected Carolyn to be grateful for everything she was given but didn't even want. Martha was beginning to see that Carolyn's refusal to say thank you was her attempt to get her mother to stop and pay attention to her. Carolyn needs a mother who understands and accepts her for who she is, who doesn't ask her to satisfy her mother's frustrations. Exactly the kind of mother Martha needed. When Carolyn pushed her mother's buttons, she tapped into Martha's painful past and the beliefs she held about herself. Martha attempted to block the button pushing, to keep her attic door locked, with her resentment and resulting emotional outburst, so she could only see her daughter behaving selfishly and ungratefully. Are you willing to allow your children to point the way? Can you acknowledge that the buttons they push are the sore spots that require your attention and care? Can you see that their behavior, frustrating as it may be, is a clue to your need as well as theirs? To trust ourselves. To trust our children, we need to trust ourselves. Antonio was 10 when his father and mother separated. The night before his father left, he raged at Antonio for leaving his toolkit out on the dining room table, where Antonio had been making a project for school. "Whose house do you think this is, anyway?" Antonio remembers his father yelling. "You leave your stuff everywhere and never think about anyone else. Nobody likes a selfish, thoughtless person." He then swiped the table clean with one swing of his arm and screamed at Antonio to get to his room. No reassurance from his mother could convince Antonio that it was not his selfishness and thoughtlessness that had caused his father to leave. He stopped trusting himself. He never looks forward to anything because he knows he will be disappointed. He doesn't make plans because he's afraid they won't turn out right and he will be to blame. Yet fears of the future abound. He envisions catastrophe. He overprotects his children for fear that harm will come to them if he's not near. He's adamant about making sure that they know he will never leave, so he works from home. He refuses to hire a babysitter or allow his children to spend the night at a friend's. So far, they have not been allowed to go on school field trips. Antonio is in danger of passing on his distrust to his children, who might either accept it or resist it with risky behavior. Antonio knows now that his father did not base his departure on his argument with his son. But still lurking in his attic are the beliefs that his selfishness can cause great harm if he is not vigilant, and that people are not to be trusted. If Antonio can examine, identify, and keep naming the source of his fears and distrust, he will be able to own his fears rather than project them as the truth. Then, when his children want to go to a friend's, he can acknowledge his concern without denying it. He can own it rather than forcing his children to adopt his beliefs. When he can forgive himself his childish fears, he can have compassion for that little boy hiding in the attic rather than blame him. Little by little, he will be able to leave his distrust in the past where it belongs. To not trust ourselves is something we learn. How often did your parents let you decide when you were hungry or full without telling you to eat or not to eat? Was it ever up to you whether you needed a coat or not? Was your opinion ever asked for in a family discussion? Did your concerns about school, sports, or friends matter? Did you ever win an argument with your parents? How early were you able to decide about the events in your life and experience the consequences of those decisions without someone either bailing you out or blaming you? For many of us, our childish sense of wonder and awe was more often squelched than encouraged, our mysteries and fears overprotected, and our fantasies reined in. We were told to act like a grown-up, not to be silly, and to stop making so much noise. We were given messages that our laughter, play, spontaneity, and babble were annoying or inconvenient. Our taste in music and clothing was looked on with disdain. More often than not, we felt a nuisance or a burden to our parents. Our play soon turned to work. Our fantasies died with childhood. Our spontaneity became organized. Our curiosity turned to skepticism. It's hard to trust ourselves when we never learned how.
Some questions to ponder about whether you trust yourself. How often am I able to confidently take action or change course in my life to do what I really want? Am I clear about what I need to do in order to get what I want? Or, if I'm not sure, do I trust that the way will be made clear at the right time? Do I feel confident in my decision-making? Do I feel confident in my parenting? Or do I find myself shying away from doing what I always wanted to do, staying where it feels safe? Do I even know what I want in my life? Am I afraid if I don't know, nothing will ever happen? Do I shirk from making decisions when I question the outcome? Am I chronically afraid that I'm doing the wrong thing? To trust our children. To trust ourselves, we need to trust our children. Watching what our children can do, perhaps with the courage and expressiveness we were never allowed, we can learn. To raise our children with the ability to trust themselves is the greatest gift a parent can give. As respect is learned by being respected, trust is learned by being trusted. Right away, we teach our children to listen to us for the answers, believing that they can't possibly know. But do we really know? We don't answer their cries because we've been told that indulging them leads to habits that will inconvenience our lives and make us miserable. When we tell them what to do, when to do it, and how to do it, we don't allow them to learn from their own mistakes. We fix, nag, do their homework, and make their projects. We sign them up for things they don't want. We tell them what to say and do, and all of it is to make us feel better. Can we set our standards not by how we think our children should measure up, but by how our standards can measure up to our children's potential? That way, our standards provide the guidelines and structure they need to feel secure while giving them the freedom to find their own path and not to follow ours. Do we ever turn the tables and listen to what they have to tell us? We rarely trust their remarkable capacity for solving their own problems, handling their own feelings, asking for help when they need it, and pointing things out to us that we have missed. Shouldn't we trust that they actually do have their own best interests in mind? We need to trust their integrity and that their button-pushing behavior is a struggle to preserve that integrity. When their cue goes unanswered or is misinterpreted, their integrity goes into fight mode. Their behavior has to get more and more dramatic in further attempts to make us see, to grab our attention, to let us know they're floundering. We must trust these cues. When we do, our children will learn to trust themselves. Molly teaches me again. My daughter Molly continues to teach me even when I think my active parenting is done. It still isn't easy to have her tell me with her words or her silence that I need to change what I'm doing. The summer before she left for college, the new lesson she had to teach was how to let go. I thought I was doing a perfectly fine job of it, even though it was hard. She had always needed home alone time, but she used to hang out downstairs. That summer she had a different agenda. Whenever she wasn't working or with her friends, she was alone in her room. Conversations ended. She became more impatient with her father and me, and her rude comments and attitude pushed our buttons. After a number of unpleasant interchanges, I lost it. My button flew into zone 4 on the button meter. We were at an impasse, and communication stopped entirely for a couple of weeks. I tried to get through to her, but to no avail. I was hurt and at a loss. After much self-talk and deliberation, I slowly came to realize that she needed a clean break in order to separate and begin her new life at college. We had always been extremely close.
Now she needed her independence, and the only way she knew how to get it while still living at home was to shut down. She'd been home all summer, working hard with little time for herself. A family friend 3,000 miles away suggested we send her out. I said it was impossible. A voice yelled inside my head, "Why should I give her anything? She's rude and unappreciative. Shouldn't she be held accountable?"
But it finally occurred to me that this might be an opportunity for her to get what she needed. My husband agreed. I presented the idea of the trip to her. She jumped at the chance, and we agreed to split the cost. She had many complicated connections to make, switching planes, getting a bus, catching a ferry, plenty of occasions to test her wings. Some might see this as a reward for hurtful behavior. But we took the chance. I put the voice that told me she was getting away with it in the guest room and let her go. She came back not only from the trip but into our relationship. But it was a different relationship. Now we're struggling to be two independent adults together. When I honor her independence first, she can honor me. What Molly taught me was that I needed to separate in her way, not in my way. She's an introvert. I'm an extrovert. We process things very differently. My job as her mother is to help her find her way, not do it my way. Molly continues to demand that I understand her needs. She has never been one to acquiesce. Her will has taught me to let her travel her own journey. I get tremendous satisfaction and fulfillment from supporting that journey and watching it unfold, even though the pain of letting go is very real. The belief that I held from my childhood, I don't count, has made it hard at times to empathize and understand her need when that old belief gets triggered by her behavior. It seems that she's saying to me, "You don't count." But I have learned that I do count, that my needs are important, so when I stop and think, I can see her behavior differently. When I trust myself, I can trust her as well. So far, trusting her has paid off.
Reparenting ourselves, learning from the past. It wasn't until I had Molly that I saw what was missing from my own childhood. She was screaming no in situations where I, as a child, would have conceded. I resented letting her get away with something I never could. But when I understood where my resentment came from, I could see that I had a right to say no, too. I could then give her what I had never had. In the giving, I gained in self-confidence and self-trust. Put yourself back into the shoes of the child you once were. Look at what that child wished for. It may be painful if she was ignored, denied, abused, or used. You may have shoved her into the back corner of that attic if the shame was great. You may not want to remember because it's possible that she blamed herself for whatever happened and still feels the blame. But reach into her. She needs your hand. When we can give what we did not get, our giving comes back to us. But if we protect our buttons and keep our wounds hidden, we pass the hurt on to our children and stay attached to our past. We cannot use our children to fix our problems, but we can use our children to help us heal. All it takes to begin is awareness.